Hello and welcome to Technology and the Arts, a podcast exploring the connections between technology and art. This is your co-host, Brian Kelly. Episode 63 of the podcast features lightly edited audio from a live Google Plus Hangout on Air, conducted August 27, 2013. In this installment, we share our thoughts on the NSA's PRISM spying program, Kevin Spacey's impassioned defense of the Netflix business model, Facebook's just-announced shared photo albums, and the Iowa City Library local music project. All of this and more is just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Friday, August 30th, 2013. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Technology and the Arts. My name is Brian Kelly.
And I'm John Lemazny.
And together, we are going to explore the connections between technology and art. So, John, it's good to see you again. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, as usual. What have you been up to?
So I have a couple things to talk about right now. I do. Right now, I met as a consultant on a possible art show in Trenton on the history of a behemoth of broadcasting in Princeton. And I'm really excited about this because I feel like there is not enough of a crossover between these two great cities. I feel like there are amazing acts of history in both Trenton and Princeton. And in this particular case, it was felt that there was not a good enough fit for this series of artifacts to show up in a traditional Princeton venue. And so they are looking for other venues. And they contacted me because I happen to be well connected with a particular venue in Trenton. And so I'm trying to walk them through that process to see if they can have a show in Trenton. So I'm excited about that. There's not enough details that I can share right now in order to give you any specifics, but let's just say I'm really excited. I hope that it works out.
Excellent.
Sorry.
Excellent. Sounds great.
Yeah, I'm excited. Library Link New Jersey, which is the main consortium for libraries in New Jersey, which is consortiums are how I got my start in presenting on technology in New Jersey to libraries. And this particular consortium is the result of an amalgam of various consortiums for libraries in New Jersey. And they've been really good to me. Library Link New Jersey has been really good to me. And I want to give a shout out to Joanne Rukins and Sophie Brookover. Just to say thank you. And all of the libraries in New Jersey who rely on those two people and the rest of the people at Library Link New Jersey. In this particular case, Library Link New Jersey has advertised various presentations that I like to give to libraries, and so far I've gotten three contacts in order to talk about technologies for libraries in New Jersey and social media for libraries in New Jersey. And in September and November and October, I am thrilled to say that I'll be able to talk to libraries in New Jersey about technology topics due entirely to Library Link New Jersey. So thank you for that. I begin teaching at Rider University, where Brian and I met, and I'm going to be teaching organizational leadership graduate students about the use of media, such as we're doing now. I'll be talking about this topic and many, many more to up-and-coming leaders in the leadership program. And I'm excited about that. I love the opportunity to talk to potential leaders about using technology effectively. And in this particular case, I want to thank Rider University for that opportunity. I have been making a lot of use recently of Doodle.com. Doodle.com recently allows you to sign in with your account and create a page that synchronizes with your Google Calendar and other calendars. I use Google Calendar almost exclusively. And by signing up at doodle.com, you can get a URL. My particular URL is doodle.com/Lemazni. And if you go there, you can see what slots are already taken up. And you can go and grab a spot on my calendar, make a suggestion to me that you would like to get together. And I've been using that so much lately. Somebody sends me an email, and typically it was a back and forth where we said, I'm available on Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday I'm available at 2, and Thursday I'm available at whatever. If I had,
and then I would send something back. Oh, how about 3? And like, nah,
exactly,
how about
right.
4? Yeah, yeah.
This is the old way of doing things. Yep. And the thing is that Google Calendar allows you to see someone's calendar, but not necessarily make a suggestion for a meeting unless you are using Google Calendar. The nice thing about doodle.com/Lemazni is anybody can go there, make a suggestion. You put in your email address. I get the notification that you have suggested a meeting, send you back a confirmation that I'm available at 2 on Thursday when you happen to be available. And it's such a beautiful thing. Why Google Calendar does not do it on its own, I'm not sure. But if you are like me and you have open slots on your calendar in which you would really love for people to come and contact you and set up a meeting, doodle.com offers a great service for that. We mentioned last week that I may be doing videos on various topics. And last week, I think I mentioned that there were Raspberry Pi videos for a major publisher. I won't mention the publisher because we haven't worked everything out yet. But what has happened is that after discussing topics with this publisher, they decided that WordPress was probably a better topic for me. And so I turned in a proposal for those videos for WordPress. And what I have gotten in return is that it looks good. So I'm really excited about that. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, August 28th, from 6 to 8 at Artworks Trenton, which is across from the DMV in Trenton, there is a meetup for arts, culture, tech, and community run by Marissa Benson, who is one of my good friends and somebody who I respect as both an artist and a programming specialist. She is going to be leading a talk on toy design. And I would recommend anybody who's interested in toys, which is most of us, I think, and certainly anybody who's interested in technology and art, to consider going to this meetup, because Marissa always does a great job of bringing people together, having great discussions about art and technology and design. That's tomorrow, 6 to 8 at Artworks Trenton.
Which, of course, for the podcast listeners won't apply, but for those listening live or watching live tonight, if you're in the Mercer County area.
That's true. And it is not a one-time thing.
Right.
The Arts, Culture, Tech, and Community Meetup, which actually, this is very interesting. I'm pretty sure you got contacted too. The way that Marissa found me was she did a search on arts, culture, tech community in New Jersey, and my name came right up.
Yeah, that didn't work for me.
So anyway,
you're Mr. Speaks Everywhere.
I guess, but it was really interesting how it happened, and it was in no small part to my involvement in this podcast. So I appreciate that, Brian.
Oh, well, thank you.
I want to say how excited I am that my Chromecast has shipped, because I ordered it about 3 days after the announcement, and it was supposed to show up maybe sometime in September, like September 30th. And it turns out that it's going to be here on August 30th. So I'm really excited about that.
Now, I don't know if you want to talk about it now, but I was going to mention a story that appeared this week about Chromecast. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that now and then?
Well, let's hold it for the in-depth segment.
Okay. All right.
And the only other thing that I wanted to mention is that Vine has made an entry into the behemoths of social media. Vine, if you don't know, is owned by Twitter, and it is a video service in which you are allowed to upload no more than 6 seconds of video, which sounds sort of ridiculous the first time you hear it, but for anybody who has watched either 5-second videos on YouTube or has ever seen any really great vines, you understand how much you can do in 6 seconds and the effect that you can have. And I wanted to bring light to Lillian Powers, who is an account on Vine, and she does really great videos. She's sort of a new star of Vine. And there are many stars of Vine, and it's really interesting to consider that these 6-second videos are making an impact on media. You know, you always knew about MTV and the 6-second edit and how that has affected our attention span over time.
Right.
In videos, for example, no particular scene shows on screen usually for more than 6 seconds. And Vine took advantage of this and said, well, what does your best 6 seconds look like? And many
and then the looping, some people use the looping to really great effect with their Vine videos.
Well, the looping is part of it. It creates a rhythm, a natural mm-hmm. rhythm to the video if you pay attention to it. And that rhythm can really create this really attractive, really beautiful beat to what's going on. And Lillian Powers, who is, I think, 12 years old, does this to great effect, but many other people do. And if you want to be entertained by Vine, just go to YouTube and do a search on Vine compilation, and you will be entertained for hours, I'm sure, because there are many people who are going out finding these videos and making compilations of them that are just beautiful collections of video, 6 seconds each. But I wanted to pay attention to this one particular young girl, Lillian Powers, who really is doing amazing things with the medium. And you and I have a lot of fun on this podcast, but I don't think that we are mastering it in the same way that Lillian is. And one of the things she does is she'll turn on Vine, she'll start a recording, and she'll say in a very whispery voice, she'll say, this is the shout out of the day. And then she'll say, "What?" And everybody in the room around her will turn around to her and pay attention, and she'll record that reaction. And it doesn't sound like much, but it's really beautiful from a 6-second video point of view. It's just this beautiful little human interaction, and she does it just right. Much better than we will ever do it. You know?
Well, yes, well, of course. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've had a conversation about this. What we do is not bad. What we do is not masterful. And we can achieve masterful in what we do, but she has already achieved it. So if you're interested in seeing how a little girl can master media, go ahead and do a search on Lillian Powers.
Well, what we do, and not to take anything away from Lillian Powers, but what we do is talk about things important to us at no cost to us, and using great technologies.
It's no cost to her.
And Vine does that too, and that's the beauty of this. But
she is making a statement about human interactions. We are making statements about Lillian Powers.
Right, and I was just replying to your off-broadcast comments. So I'm just saying, whatever.
By the way, I'm not upset. I'm not unhappy. I love what we do. But I feel like we could possibly tap into something like that and make it truly great. Let's do that.
No. You know, it's funny. You know, you've been talking about the It's a Thing podcast, and I've been listening to it. And
It's a Thing is a thing, right?
It is. It's a thing.
Why couldn't we do that and make it so much better than what they're doing?
We could, and that's what I was thinking about.
Should.
But you know what? We've been trying to tighten up the webcast and the podcast, and I think we have. I mean, we've gone too much over 45 minutes.
It ever has been.
And we're going on a tangent now, so we'll get off it in a second.
I don't mind tangents, by the way. I think tangents are where our success happens.
Probably.
Correct. Our natural conversations are possibly the best part of our podcast, whether it be about Doctor Who or whether it be about our failures or whether it be about whatever. I think that's the gold of our dig.
You're absolutely right. And but I'm listening to it, and I'm like – And I'm trying to hear where it's like, you know, this is going on for a little bit too long. And I'm like, you know, that's what happens to us. So I'm trying to be a little more aware of that. And in talking about that, I've just broken that rule. But
yeah, but this conversation is maybe the most important part of this podcast.
That is correct.
And meanwhile, we are not limited to 6 seconds. If we were limited to 6 seconds, it would be a much different thing.
Yeah.
And there's something about that beautiful loop of 6 seconds that if we were to take the essence of what we do and to get it down to 6 seconds and to somehow do a jump from something you say to something I say to something you say to something I say in 6 seconds, we would have a hit.
Yeah, it would also be very unintelligible. You know, I think neckbeards need like a 6-hour loop.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of play with how much time it takes to make a great video. 6 seconds is one suggestion, but there are other suggestions, and there are some video platforms that do 12 seconds, such as 12seconds.com, mm-hmm. which I think recently died. But
yeah, what is Instagram doing now? Isn't that that's
like
double
8
digits,
seconds,
right?
Or something like that? 15 seconds, maybe.
Yeah, I think it is 15. I'll have to check on that, but
I know. It's like, if we had to limit ourselves, you and I, to 15 seconds, by cutting down what we talk about in an hour to 15 seconds of greatness, we would really possibly have something, because we have little moments of genius.
Yeah, we could do a Vine cut of a Technology in the Arts podcast.
Hey man, do you want to be famous? That's how we do it.
Okay.
If you want to be famous, that's how we do it. We do a 6-second cut of Technology in the Arts.
Okay. Well, anything else on your end this week?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to update everybody. A couple weeks ago, I think, I talked about I played accordion for my friend, singer-songwriter Christian Beach, on a cover of Yoko Ono's Silver Horse.
So let's just stop there.
Yes.
Like, that's our 6-second cut. You played accordion on a cut of Yoko Ono's song.
Yes, like, a cover of Yoko Ono's song.
Of course. Yeah. Does Yoko know who you are?
No, Yoko Ono.
Not yet. But wouldn't that be beautiful?
Yeah, it would absolutely be beautiful.
Okay.
So anyway, and we recorded it, I don't know, it was like a month or so ago, maybe a little longer than that. And I just heard this week the final mix of the song that's been submitted to Main Man Records, who's putting out a Yoko Ono tribute album this year. It's her 80th birthday. And that should be coming out either late next month or early to mid-October, but their release times usually get pushed back even further than what they expect. But hopefully it'll be out in the fall at some point. But it sounds really good. And, you know, it's a very bluesy take on the song, which is, you know, has that Yoko kind of just a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Idiosyncratic.
That's a good word.
I guess that's the word I'm looking for.
I don't know if it's the word you're looking for, but it's a great word.
Yeah, I don't think it is the word I'm looking for. But, you know, it's just a little bit quirky. And
a little bit quirky. That's
that perfect.
Was what you were.
There's our 6 seconds. There's our 6 seconds. Had some beats drop in there. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, getting back to Silver Horse, you know, it sounds great, and hopefully once there's a release date, that's kind of firm from Main Man Records.
Kind of firm. That's a funny way of putting it.
I asked Christian if he would be able to join us. So hopefully that'll happen, and I'm gonna maybe do some test runs with him to see if we can, you know, do a live performance, not of Silver Horse, because I don't know what the, you know, it's being published by Main Man, you know, on the CD, and I don't know what the rights issues for all that. And I don't know how that goes, but, you know, Christian has a bunch of his own material that he can play. And we can talk about the Yoko Ono song, but, you know, hopefully we can do a live performance from Christian on the webcast. Secondly, this is kind of just a weird little story. We were going to the shore down in Brigantine, New Jersey, this past weekend, and I had my phone in my hand with some other stuff as we were getting the car packed, and I went to put something in my wife's car in the trunk, and I put my phone down and some other stuff on the trunk of my car next to hers, and as I go to close her trunk after I put what I was putting in there in the trunk, I hear a smack, and I see my phone lying screen down on the driveway, and the back is shattered. The glass on the back is shattered, and I'm like, or plastic, whatever it is. I'm like, oh, and I'm like, I was afraid to pick it up to see what the screen looked like. Strangely enough, the screen, the touchscreen is perfect. It's fine. Nothing happened to the touchscreen. It's just the back, and the fractures didn't even go into the camera area, so the camera even works. So, and it was unprotected. I had an OtterBox at one point, but it kind of fell apart. And so, you know, I've been leaving. You know, I was thinking about getting a new phone, you know, with the iPhone coming up. So I really didn't want to buy a new OtterBox for my iPhone 4 in case I wanted to get something new. So I was kind of just going without something. And, you know, obviously that backfired. But I bought this cheaper model that just covers the back. So when you look at it now, it looks fine, but the back of the iPhone is basically just shattered. And, you know, with the new iPhone announcement apparently, you know, a few weeks away, this is like the absolute worst time for that to happen as far as an iPhone user, because it's kind of, you're kind of in that
aren't,
area
aren't
where
you tempted though
to go Android. I just have so much of my stuff, you know, in iTunes and on my Mac. It's just going to be.
Aren't you tempted though?
Little tempted, but you know, I've said I don't really care. You know, it's not that I favor iPhone over Android. It's just that I'm used to the Apple. It's not that I'm for one or the other. I think they're both fine. I'm just more familiar with the Apple ecosystem. Also, another thing that's not really an in-depth thing, but something that's going on around here, and I think it touches on what we've talked about in the past, especially in the Art All Night special episode we did, about this area seeing this kind of renaissance as far as being an artistic community. This company, Isles Inc., is redeveloping this vacant mill from the 1890s that's on the Hamilton Trenton New Jersey border, and they plan to turn it into a self-sustaining community that's going to include art studios, classrooms, lofts, and retail space. And you know, they talk a lot about having these art, having it serve as an arts hub, as well as a business and training center. So they also plan 45 apartment lofts and some retail shops and a cafe. So there's a real chance for this building, like I said, a vacant building, a la Art All Night, you know, turning a vacant, you know, industrial building into this kind of, you know, artistic venture. And maybe it's the start of like an artist village, you know, in the area. So I'm kind of interested to see
because the presence of that is so small right now.
Yeah. So that was just something interesting that I saw recently. And, you know, it's something that's happening in the area, John and I, where John and I reside. So just something to keep an eye on for the future. But that's all I want to talk about personally this week. I guess it's time to go in depth, in focus, in perspective, whatever we call it now. And
we really need bumpers.
Yeah, it's hard to do. Well, it's hard to do with the webcast. I can do it in the podcast,
I guess. I mean, we could, even if we like flashed up a, you know, screen.
You want me to get signs? I can just hold them up.
Like, well, I mean, that's what we're doing now, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can hold up a sign like in focus.
In focus.
In focus.
I'll be happy to design the sign.
Yeah. And you know, actually, while you're at it, can you
give No. I really like the late 80s feel of the logo that we have.
Well, can you give me an EPS at least so I can get this bigger?
Yeah, I can give you an SVG for sure.
Okay, well, whatever. Is this something I can get it printed?
I think it's time to redesign a couple of elements of the podcast. And I think that the logo, for sure, is an element that could be redesigned.
Yes, I agree. And we talked about that last year, but it's like, you know, it's like, oh, we had all those months in between our test run last year and this year's run where we were gonna, you know, have backdrops and all this stuff, and it's like, I didn't even like. Obviously, you can see. I didn't do this until like 3 days.
This is a common issue for major podcasts. You know, I think of the Twit Network as sort of the be-all, end-all of doing this kind of work. And like they go for months saying in the podcast, we really need to change our bumpers. We really need to change our logo. And like they just don't do it. And they have like a team of people. They have like 30 people. So, you know, if they can't do it, I don't feel too bad about not being able to do it.
And it was funny listening to It's a Thing with Molly Wood, you know, talking about people complaining about our microphone. And I'm
beautiful
like,
logo, by the way.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, it was funny when I was listening to it, I'm like, oh, man, this sounds like, you know, when John and I were podcasting back in 2007.
Right. It's so low key, right?
Yeah.
And they just talk about like whatever. And there's no science to it. There's no Mythbusters. There's no, they just talk about what they feel is going on right now. And I love that.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting
format. And they break it out over like three sections. There's a what Tom feels, what Molly feels, and then like the feedback they've gotten from Twitter.
Yes, and it would be great if we could, you know, provide, you know, do something with audience feedback, except we don't have an audience.
We could certainly make it like it's a thing in art, you know?
Yes.
Certainly. Anyway.
Okay, so, John, what would you like to talk about in perspective or in focus or whatever?
Well, the one thing I really want to talk about, I have a couple, but the one thing that comes to mind is that you and I, grew up in a particular time in America. And the time that we grew up in America had a culture of pro-American ideals. And we've lost that. You know, we have certainly had our feelings about the government and about America in general sort of broken down over time to the point where I personally don't feel particularly patriotic. And it's gotten even worse recently because of the revelation by Snowden of the PRISM project, which should surprise no one. Should surprise no one. And meanwhile, like Brian and I would love it if anyone listened to our podcast, but the idea that the NSA is maybe the only people who are listening to our podcast.
Well, now they are.
It's kind of sad. Well, you know, I don't care. I really don't. Excuse my French.
No, but that's, but yeah, well, like you said, I mean, it's no surprise. And the fact that people were reacting to, you know, these revelations, how shocking it was. And I'm like, you know, this stuff has been going on for years. I mean, the Patriot Act, you know, started all this.
It's been going on for a very long time.
Even before that. And it's like, nobody cared. But here's, it's like, oh, well, this shouldn't happen in this country, you know. And it's like.
It shouldn't happen in this country.
Here's the problem.
It should not happen in this country.
Right, but here's the problem, though. You know, Snowden wants to go to Ecuador. And it's like, they're the worst country anywhere as far as spying on their own people.
That's all external to the
nation. But then it turns out everybody has a spying program. Everybody's listening to each other. And it's like, and themselves.
That doesn't make me feel better.
It doesn't make you feel better. But it's like, you know, the U.S. is in a kind of a tough spot. You know?
No.
I mean, if everybody's doing it, it's not right. It's not right. You're correct. You know, the problem is
to accept that because it's common practice that America should participate.
And I acknowledge that. But I mean, there are from what I've read that there are protocols that the NSA has and the intelligence community has that is really supposed to limit what they can listen to. And
one of the most famous stories that came out after this
is that
the NSA is deciding to listen to love letters between
Yes.
That's disgusting. That's incredibly disgusting. Like
it is. It is. And that's
it's one thing to know that that's happening and to just accept that it's happening and to participate in it and understand that if you are having phone sex that you might have an audience, you know, and maybe that's okay even, but it's like, you should have the benefit of the doubt. And yeah, we don't.
We
are
totally
not
understand.
Alone. You and I in this conversation are not alone. Every conversation I've probably had for the last, 5 years has not been alone. And that's disturbing because I meant for those conversations to be discreet. I meant for those conversations to be private. I meant for those conversations to be my own. And that was the one promise that this country made to me. And I was born into it. I didn't come here for that purpose, but I was really happy that I was born here because I got that benefit, is that I have the right of privacy. And I no longer have that right. And it disgusts me. And some country will emerge as a reaction to this. Some country will emerge and say, oh, you wanted privacy? I know you thought you had that. We have that over here. Come over here. And I will run there. Because this is not reasonable. This is not fair. And it's one of those kinds of freedoms that I became accustomed to, even though I never had it.
Right.
By the way, I'm not particularly private. Meanwhile, like, if you want to know what's going on in my life, go look at my Facebook page. I make everything public. And if I have something to say, I say it there. If I have something to say, I get onto a podcast and I have a conversation with Brian or with anybody else. And I say, this is how I feel about this thing. I'm a little bit reserved, but not much. And so there is not a lot left to find, but I should have that right. I should be able to have a private conversation on my telephone.
Right. Well, I mean, as we have discussed in the past, I mean, anybody who is on the internet basically, you know, has very little. I mean, they should have an expectation of privacy, but there really isn't any. Once it's out there, I mean,
you and I have lived within that premise that mm-hmm. if you publish something, that it might as well be on the front page of the New York Times. But not yeah. everybody thinks that way.
Yeah, you're right. And
including the gentleman who murdered his wife and then took a photo of it.
That was terrible. Yeah,
it was terrible. And I'm saying, you know, I'm also not concerned about the NSA finding that photo. I'm concerned about the in-between. I'm concerned about somebody making a revelation to a close friend that they did not intend to be public, and it is more than public. It is illegal.
No, it's a shame that it's come to this.
It's a crime.
I mean, I'm not sure about a country emerging. As I said, I mean, it's becoming increasingly clear that this is a very common practice among.
Brian, I predict Canada. I predict Switzerland. I predict Iceland. I predict Germany. Germany is very, very protective of privacy, which is amazing considering its history. But no. Somebody will emerge. Somebody will be a champion of privacy. It will not be America, which is sad.
You would think that they would have come out by now, though, saying,
no.
Hey, Edward Snowden,
no.
Come here.
No. I'm not surprised that they have not emerged because a crisis has not emerged yet. But it's coming. A crisis is coming, where people in America will realize what this revelation means, and there will be a reaction in which some other country, some other entity will step up and say, oh, you wanted privacy. We have that. Come, join us. Because America is not allowing it anymore. It's incredibly sad. I've never been less patriotic than I am now. And I never would have suspected that with Barack Obama, who I genuinely adore ideologically. He is not living up to his promise. And it saddens me.
Well, we're getting a lot of comments on the blog.
Well, good. So I'm really glad about that.
Because within the last 10 minutes, so hopefully.
I think that this is important. I think this is an important topic. And I think comments are an indication that people care about what it is that we're talking about. And we need people to care about what we're doing, or we need to not do this.
Right. So, all right, what else do you have this week?
So on a lighter note.
Yeah.
And it would have to be, because that's about the heaviest thing I've ever.
I think it's the heaviest thing we've ever tackled on.
Yeah, but I mean, it's technology, certainly, and maybe a bit of art.
Not much, but.
Yeah.
Well, we went back to our old ways.
We go along a continuum, you and I.
Where we kind of cut everything off at the, well, I guess we don't have an ampersand, but in some cases we do, but.
We should have an ampersand. Ampersands are the So.
Cursing on this episode.
I'm upset.
I can tell.
So, the one bit of bright news that I got this week was that YouTube and Google approached the NFL about their Sunday ticket, which is a purchasable item currently owned by DirecTV and is going to be released in 2014 to the highest bidder, I guess. And for cord cutters like me, the holy grail is the ability to go out and purchase individual relationships with producers of content, of media. And some of the best media still exists in cable entities like AMC. As a matter of fact, I stupidly paid Verizon so that I could watch AMC. I realized this after I paid them. And realized that the only reason that I was paying attention to cable, the only reason I was paying Verizon for Fios television was so that I could watch Mad Men, so that I could watch Breaking Bad, so that I could watch The Killing, so that I could watch shows from AMC. And my reaction was, why doesn't AMC just make an app so that I can pay them directly, have them make more money by far, and be able to control my relationship with media? I don't necessarily want to pay Verizon for sports content. I don't want to pay for direct ticket. I don't want to pay for NFL. I don't want to pay for MLB. I don't want to pay for NBA. It's not my thing. I just don't care. But I would be very willing to pay a premium for AMC. I would be willing to pay a premium for HBO, as long as I didn't have to pay the rest of $150 or the rest of the $100 or the rest of the $70. Nobody makes that easy. I would pay easily $30 a month for HBO. I would pay probably another $20 a month for AMC, and I would have all of my media needs met by far. But I can't do that because the situation that we have is one in which cable companies control the way that we consume media. And it's really sad. It's another kind of control that a company who has been long in power, and that being cable, I'm not specifically talking about Verizon or Cablevision or whoever, but these entities that have control over these networks certainly have control over consumers. And they say, well, this is the way that we offer it. If you don't like that, then you should probably, you know, go watch your little Netflix thing. And that's exactly what I did. But there are still shows that I want to watch. Breaking Bad is the most amazing television program on television right now. And I still watch it, but I watch it illegally. And I could pay for it, which is great. But I would prefer to not have to do it nickel and dime. I would prefer to just subscribe to Netflix or subscribe to whoever and be able to get that content in a reasonable way for around $8 a month. Why do I have to pay $100 a month in order to see that content?
And
I don't have a good answer.
No.
I'm proposing that answer because I'm disgusted by it. If Netflix can do what they do for $8 a month, then Verizon can get off their ass and offer me something like a per-channel subscription for $10 a month. I would gladly subscribe to AMC for $10 a month.
Some kind of a la carte service is going to emerge at some point.
I don't care about the rest of the spectrum. I really don't. I like PBS. I like one or two shows on other networks. I might like to even watch HGTV or Food Network from time to time. But what I need to see is on AMC.
Right.
And the rest of it is available on Netflix. And I already pay them my $8 a month or whatever, and I'm very happy. So this idea that the NFL might even consider YouTube as a venue for their direct ticket means that there is a possible future for cable cutters like me to be able to subscribe individually to YouTube channels in order to watch my content when it comes out. There's nothing more aggravating than even having to wait the hour before the torrent is available for Breaking Bad in order for me to see that show, just because I did not decide to pay $100 in order to grab a whole bunch of channels that I care nothing about. Very aggravating. Give me what I want. I'm not the only one who is making this argument. There are others, including Kevin Spacey, who, a recent star of House of Cards on Netflix, exclusively on Netflix, said this was a success. This was very low cost to produce, comparative to going it through the networks in order to produce the same show. We did not have to produce a pilot episode. Netflix trusted us to make great content. We did, and we all won. The viewers won, the producers won, the actors won. Everybody wins. So I'm waiting for the next Breaking Bad to show up on Netflix. It has not happened yet. House of Cards was great. Orange is the New Black is a pretty good show. Arrested Development is a fine show. I really love crime drama. I love The Wire. My favorite show in the world is The Wire. My favorite show in the world is The Shield. My favorite show in the world is NYPD Blue. My favorite show in the world is Breaking Bad, bar none. When Netflix produces the next Breaking Bad, everybody else will say, why didn't we do this first? Go do it first. Give Netflix some competition and allow me to buy into it individually, aside from a cable subscription, because cable is the old black. Cable is dead, and it is scrambling for life at this point. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey, in his speech to the Edinburgh International Television Festival, gave the best possible argument for the new way forward. And I could not agree more. I should not have to pursue great television through an old way of producing. I should be able to choose the way that I decide to watch it in the way that I can with so much media. But there are specific pieces of media that make me jump through hoops. I have not watched Game of Thrones except for a few episodes here and there. I would love to watch it. I would love to pay somebody for it. But HBO makes it really difficult for me to be able to do that. And it's disgusting, in fact. It's great television. Why can't I get to it? Because I decide not to pay for a whole bunch of channels that I don't care about. Have some sense, HBO. Do what Netflix is doing before Netflix achieves the success that they are guaranteed to achieve.
Well,
and I will be paying you too.
There was actually something I was going to talk about tonight, and didn't see that you put that in there, and I had taken it out, so I'll have to refresh my memory on it. But
are you saying I scooped you?
No. Actually, I had it in our script, but I took it out because it was kind of like a confusing topic, and it was mostly a financial issue, but it had to do with Netflix and their model of putting all the episodes online at once.
Well, he talks about that in the video. He talks about what's called binge viewing, and he's saying if this is what the people want and there's no disbenefit to doing that, then who are we to judge about how they watch video just because we didn't watch video this way before?
Well, that's what the article was saying, that there is a potential issue with Netflix's stock price because, and this is why I got confused.
Because they don't make the money back quick enough?
Well, something about when there's expenses to having shows like the licenses, and usually they're spread out over the life of the show, but when people are watching
it. But those subscribers don't sign up and then leave after a month after they've watched
Cards. It was kind of a theoretical thing, but it would have to
be theoretical because in practice it's bullshit.
Right, but more cursing on this episode. I'm going to be putting on.
I don't care. I'm really, really passionate about this particular topic.
Yeah, well, I have to edit it for the podcast, and the podcast is family.
Well, you better get your beeper finger ready because this is what's happening.
To put in those beep. But anyway, it talked about how now the expenses are going to be coming instead of being spread out, are going to be take place all at once, and that it would affect its stock price. And it's something to watch for in terms of their business model. I think it's more of a theoretical thing. I don't think it's actually happened, but they kind of alluded to it on a recent conference call. So it's just a thing that it deserves watching as far as Netflix's business model, which I'm all for. I'm on your side with that. I'm just saying there might be a downside to that as far as Netflix's accounting.
Oh, there might be, but I've heard the argument. And the argument is that they spend X amount of dollars, and they make back X amount of dollars over time. The thing is that people don't subscribe to Netflix for a month. People subscribe to Netflix for 6 months or a year or forever.
Right.
And that's the beautiful thing. It's so affordable that people just consider it like a website. You know, how much do you consider month to month how much you pay for your domain?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
How much a month? It was like, I don't know, like $10, whatever.
It's not $8 to $10 a month.
Well, that's what it comes down to.
It might be like $100
a year
a month for your domain. And then
For domain and web hosting, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I consider Netflix one of those kinds of expenses. It is the way that I enjoy media. And if somebody else decided to ask me for another $3 or $5 or $10 a month so that I can enjoy really great media that was not available on Netflix, like HBO, like AMC, I would do it easily. And they would make a mint comparative to their relationship with cable situations. But we're in a transitional phase, and so I understand why that hasn't happened yet. But cable can either get in front of it and do something to propel it, or they can continue to hold on to an old model that does not work anymore, which punishes the viewer and really does not benefit the producer.
Okay, so you have one more thing?
Yeah, I do. I have a Chromebook. I think we've talked about it in the past. I have a couple Chromebooks, in fact. And I happen to be talking to you on macOS right now, and I have over there an Ubuntu box that I use attached to my television in case I want to do something on Linux. If I want to do something that is design-related or video-related, I'll do it on this box here. And the reason that I'm doing that is because Chrome only allows me to get the stuff that's on a web, that is at a URL-based destination. There were great promises made by tools like Aviary, which does not offer great design tools anymore. And there are some other companies that offer paint tools and photo manipulation tools, but nothing that equates to Photoshop. If I'm on a desktop machine, if I'm on this Mac here or I'm on that Linux box there, I can open up the GIMP. I can open up Inkscape. I can open up Scribus. I can open up Blender and be able to do real three-dimensional or video or timeline-based or design work. I can't do that yet on the web, and my question is why? My argument is we have the technology. You have all the money that you need, really, because if you produce this tool, people will pay for it either through advertising or through a subscription or whatever. And meanwhile, Adobe is doing it because right now you need to pay for Adobe in order to get Creative Suite. Why don't these tools exist for me? I don't want to pay Adobe, but that has more to do with Adobe than anything else. If an open source tool emerged that I could download and install on my desktop and be able to get all the benefits of open source, but if they also offered a cloud-based version that allowed me to not have to install it. The perfect example is Scratch, which moved to the web. If I go to scratch.mit.edu, I get all the benefits that I ever had and then some of the desktop-based installation. I still can download the source code and manipulate it if I wish. I can know exactly what's in it, which is all I care about philosophically. I'm willing to pay for Scratch. I'm also willing to pay for Inkscape. I'm willing to pay for the GIMP. But I would prefer that I can get to them in my browser. Right now, I can't. Where is that set of tools? Until it's there, I can't move to a Chromebook. Google would find great benefit in supporting the promotion of tools like Inkscape, tools like GIMP in the browser, because that allows me to move away from my MacBook Pro. It allows me to move away from my Lenovo-based, Windows-based desktop to a Chromebook, to a Pixel. I would pay $1,500 if I could do all the work that I do on this tower-based Mac in my Chromebook. I can't do that right now. And it angers me because we're in the future. We have flying cars. We have jetpacks. Where is my design tool that allows me to do my work without anything more than a browser? And that's all I have to say.
Okay. That was not on my list, and I just thought of talking about this at the end, so I was just trying to get something up while you were talking. I was listening to you, obviously. But yeah, you know, you're right. And it's something I never really thought of, that, you know, that there really are no great design tools in the cloud yet. And there's definitely a huge hole there.
What are some of our comments, Brian? What are the people in the chat room saying?
Not in the chat, but I'm getting there's a whole slew of people liking our post on WordPress, including one that goes by Opinionated Man. So that might have been – that was around the time you were firing all weapons at the NSA. So
good. Well, let's keep doing that. because I think that we need a new purpose that has to do with technology and art, but also has to do with, you know, what's right? What's right in our point of view?
Right.
We need a point of view is what I'm saying.
So, all right. So let me, I'll come back to this. But you mentioned the Chromecast earlier and,
I did. I can't wait. It's going to be here on Friday.
Yes, I know. But there was a story, on Gizmodo, yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's probably nothing to be alarmed about, but basically, a firmware update to Chromecast that developers have noticed, especially there was a third-party app developer.
I know something about this.
Making an app called Allcast, which would have allowed you to stream content to the Chromecast that wasn't necessarily supported by Chromecast. But apparently Google's firmware update disabled that ability. And some mentioned in the comments that, you know, it's not a full API. That, you know, this is just a software developer's kit right now. It's just an SDK. And, you know, this might not be what eventually, you know, is the, you know, public version. I mean, this is as far as the developers are concerned. So, I mean, it's something to watch for that Google is shutting this off. And I guess it shouldn't really be a surprise that they're trying to limit it to the supported uses, you know, with the partner content providers. But, and Google did, correct me if I'm wrong, but they've promoted the tab casting abilities of Chromecast, correct?
Yeah, you can do that.
Out of Chrome. So, yep. So I mean, if it's in a browser, you know, in a Chrome tab, it should be able to stream it.
So here's the thing about that particular issue, and I'm not sure how much you know about it, and certainly correct me if you are hearing if you know something different according to the articles. The developer of Allcast did not use the published API. In order to produce,
they use the SDK.
In order to produce, no, the SDK has not been published. The SDK, he used a reverse engineering methodology.
That's right. That is correct.
To get to something similar to an SDK. And the problem with that is that because it's not published, Google, that's part of the reason why it's not published, is because Google is still working on a project in motion. It's not as though they published this and somebody reacted to it and created an app, and then they said, oh, well, here's what's going to happen in the next release of this SDK. They did not release an SDK, and so his app is not guaranteed to work at all in the first revision. It's certainly not going to necessarily work if they make a whole bunch of changes that they are not publishing.
Right.
So
that is correct.
I have no sympathy for this guy. I have a lot of envy for the guy that he's able to even make a tool like this. But I have no sympathy for the guy who's saying, boo-hoo, Google changed their stuff, and now my junk doesn't work. It's a much different situation than if they had published it as an open API or an open SDK and decided to change it without announcement, but they didn't do any of that.
Right.
They made a workaround, and the workaround no longer works because they chose a new path. When they are ready, when Google feels like they have a solid tool and interface for developers, they will release that. This is a brand new product for $35. They wanted to get it out as quickly as possible. They are redeveloping the way that it works in real time, because despite the fact that they wanted to get it out as quickly as possible, they also want to make it perfect. And they may never reach perfection, but in the meantime, their striving towards perfection may break stuff that is never intended to be used with it. This is a nonsense story. And it's one of those things that Google haters bring up, and they say, look at what Google's doing. Ooh.
Well, that wasn't my intent.
And I thought they were supposed to be an open source company. F*** you, dude. It is not an open source company. They have open source support for many of their products. Android is an example. But that does not make anything beyond Android an open source product. And this is the same thing. Chrome is an open source product. Chromecast is not. Chromecast is a limited release API. And for anything else to work outside of that is folly at best. I really don't want to hear it.
I only brought it up as, you know.
No, it's a great story. I'm really glad that you brought it up because it gives me an opportunity to spout a bit about it. But
well, that was also my intent, too, to kind of set the record straight. But, you know, I think a lot of people, when this came out, had this grand dream of what Chromecast would be. But,
it's still a dream.
Yes.
I've used it. I used a friend of mine, as a matter of fact, the girl who called. She had a Chromecast, and I tried it out. And I love the thing. But it only does YouTube, Netflix, and, Google Music. And as a matter of fact, I couldn't even get Google Music to work on it. But it's better than what I have now. I have a Roku for $100 that does half of what the Chromecast does, despite whatever limitations it might have. If I can bring up video inside of a tab, I can get it to show on my television. Right now, I can't do that with Roku. Not easily, not reliably.
Right. Okay, I guess the next thing I want to talk about was Facebook apparently rolling out shared photo albums.
Yeah.
So that way, you and I could have a shared technology in the arts photo album.
Absolutely.
And
or we could just have a shared friendship album, or we could have a shared technology album, or we have a shared, we could share an album just to keep, instead of using Google Docs, which we use now, we could put up photos to remind us of stories that we might want to talk about. There's a thousand ways that we could possibly use this.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about that. I'm not a big Pinterest fan, but I'm wondering if maybe that's something we should probably, as an artistic webcast, maybe we should.
Absolutely.
We should. Absolutely.
I love Pinterest. As a matter of fact, I just wrote an article about it for a library collection on library mashups with various technologies, and Pinterest is a great way for libraries and so many other entities to engage people in visual thinking.
All right. But getting back to the Facebook shared albums, so you can have up to 50 contributors to a shared album. And each contributor can add up to 200 photos, meaning that you can have a shared album as large as 10,000 photos, which is considerably more than what you can put on an album, a Facebook photo album now, which is limited to 1,000 total photos. And obviously you can only add photos to your
own album. Close to reaching that limit.
Right, right.
I mean, I'm a photographer. I put up photos almost every day.
Right. I mean, you kind of really – the whole purpose of albums is to organize and segment your photos. I mean, if you really have an album of 1,000 photos, you're really not doing it right anyway, probably.
I guess. I mean, I would not want to have to look through them all, for sure.
Right. So
And, I mean, think about the way that you consume photos from your friends on Facebook now. You might look at one. If you're really interested, you might look at three.
Right.
And did you happen to see my post of photos today?
At the moment.
I mean, be honest. And I'm not going to be offended. I just want to know.
At the Princeton Battlefield.
I was at the Princeton Battlefield. I took a couple of photos with my kids. We walked around. We took a bunch of photos. And it was fun and it was great, but that's not a case where it would necessarily be shared. But if I wanted to share before this, it would be very difficult for me to do that. And it's one of those things where it gives an opportunity for sharing that wasn't there before. I love the idea.
Right. And speaking of which, though, since that just rang a bell in my head that you were at Princeton Battlefield, it's a local story as far as John and I are concerned. But did you see my post earlier this week about the 9/11 memorial in Princeton?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. And you know, do you know about the whole story there?
I know what you talked about.
Okay. Well, just real quick. Princeton has this beam from the World Trade Center. There is a cross shape cut.
Meanwhile, I watched Loose Change again this morning. So I'm going to go check it for sulfite marks.
Right. So anyway, so the issue is they want to have this memorial. And they have this beam from the World Trade Center, has a cross cut into it, which is causing some issues with whether the town can actually put it up because it has this religious symbol on it. But that was an issue apparently taken care of. They were going to put the beam so that it wasn't so obvious that the cross was there and whatever. But there's a deputy fire chief in Princeton who is spearheading this drive, and I'm not quite sure who else is involved. It seems like it's just him, but they want to put, or he wants to put, the memorial, this beam, in the Princeton battlefield, which is a Revolutionary War site and tribute to those who died and gave their lives in the Revolutionary War. And he feels it's the perfect place to put this beam from 9/11, which has nothing to do with the Revolutionary War. And it's a very tranquil place. And now you're going to put this, you know, burned, charred piece of metal from, and yes, it's a tragedy, but it took place over 200 years after the Revolutionary War. So there was this kind of controversy because Princeton had proposed this idea, and then it got shot down by the state because the state overlooks Princeton Battlefield State Park. And, you know, the deputy fire chief then made an announcement that Governor Christie changed his mind and allowed it to go forward. But it turned out that what he approved was the what Princeton had, without this deputy chief apparently realizing it, proposed this other idea of putting it next to the new firehouse that was being constructed, or it was under construction or completed. I'm not sure.
That seems a lot more appropriate.
It seems like a much more appropriate location. It's a more municipal setting. A lot more people will see it in that area. And the deputy fire chief is, like, really insisting on putting it in the Princeton Battlefield State Park. And I just don't understand how it makes any sense.
Well,
the thing that's weird is that it really takes away from both events. I mean, you're taking away from the Revolutionary War aspect by putting this tribute to this other event in the same place, and vice versa. You're not giving each event its just due. And Princeton Battlefield Park has been there for ages. And
very long time.
Yeah, and unfortunately the Mercer Oak isn't there anymore, which was actually seen
there.
Well, yeah, but didn't they replant it? It's not the same tree, isn't it?
I don't know about
that. The original tree died. There.
For sure.
I thought the original tree died.
I thought it was just broken.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know. But anyway, it was just a weird story. And I don't understand why this guy is like so insisting on.
Well, because people are passionate about these kinds of things. And I think that he probably feels in, I think, what is a short-sighted view of history that the 9/11 tragedy is equivalent and somehow associated with Princeton in the same way that the Princeton battle, the Battle of Princeton was. And it's just a he's emotional about it. He feels like, but it's this one guy. And the thing is that hopefully more level-minded views will prevail, because there is no association between the Battle of Princeton and Princeton Battlefield and what happened there and 9/11. And, you know, I mentioned loose change, and I always thought loose change was nonsense, but I just recently talked to somebody who was involved in the military who says, you know, you should pay attention to loose change. And I never would have if I hadn't had this conversation. But it's, you know, all of a sudden it makes a lot more sense. It's really kind of scary and sad. It really is. It really is.
This is the most profanity-laced, controversial episode of Technology in the Arts ever.
Probably the most watched, also.
And it's going to be the last time we get viewers. But all right, so I talked about the Facebook shared photo albums, which is has just started being rolled out to people. So to a small number of users. So and like most things on Facebook, it'll be available first only on the desktop version before going to mobile, which Facebook mobile is a very, very frustrating experience as far as I'm concerned.
Maybe you should come to Android.
Well, it'd still be a frustrating experience. It's Facebook. It's not the... I wanted to talk about something last, but hold on. Maybe I can get this... I can find this link. At least if I can find the date. I was hoping to find... Oh, here we go. This is what I was looking for. I'll have to screen share this. And what is this? 11:27 p.m. Okay. All right. So I've mentioned it before, but I think it was last time was during last year's run of Technology in the Arts webcast. But NASA has a launch facility in Wallops Island, Virginia, Wallops Flight Facility. Right on the eastern shore, and every now and then they'll launch sounding rockets or some kind of smaller rockets from this facility, and you can see them up here in New Jersey. They did it was just before my son was born, a couple months before that, where it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, and they launched a series of like six rockets, I think, and they released this chemical into the air to study the upper atmosphere winds, and it was very cool. You could see the rockets ascending into the air, and then they would hit their apex, and this chemical, this stream, was released into the air and created these shapes, and as it was blown by the upper atmospheric winds, and they were able to study them. So, but now I think the largest rocket, that's ever been launched from there, it's the Lady mission, and Lady is LADEE. It's the Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer. And, it is going to the moon, and they are launching from Wallops. And let me see if I can get this map out. And then see if I can successfully do a screen share, which I haven't had to do so far tonight.
Not yet.
Yep. So let's see. Okay, so you can see. All right, so here's where Wallops Flight Facility is on the the Virginia Eastern Shore here, part of that Delmarva Peninsula. And this is the area where you should be able to see the launch. So here is, I believe, okay, so this inner circle is T plus 30 seconds. So 30 seconds after launch, you'll be able to start seeing it. This yellow circle, which extends out to most of Delaware, except for the northern half, is 1 minute into the mission. And then this larger circle is, you should be able to see the rocket launch in this giant area, all the way up in the, almost Maine. But New Jersey, definitely well within range, about 2 minutes after launch. So, and this is going to take place. So the first attempt to launch this is going to be 11:27 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, September 6th. And that's from the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, MARS, if you want to go with the acronym. As you know, they plan that. So, and that's at the Wallops Flight Facility, the NASA Wallops Flight Facility. And you should follow them on Twitter. They're kind of an interesting bunch. So, something cool to watch. And let me get out of the screen share now. All right, I'm back. Let me get my screen here. And finally, what I want to talk about is an NPR article that I came across. And it's about the Iowa City Public Library has come up with this, the Iowa City Library Local Music Project. And this retired librarian was sitting in a bar listening to a local artist perform, local musician, and he had been spending the library's budget on a bunch of, out-of-area musicians. And they came up with this licensing scheme so that if you have an Iowa City Library card in a computer, or even I think you can do it on a mobile device now, you can download more than 100 albums by local Iowa City musicians and for free, and you own them forever. And most of the artists are giving the library some of their older out-of-print stuff from the catalogs, but a lot of today's bands, and rightfully so, they don't mind getting their music into the hands of people. So they're actually giving them stuff that's brand new in some cases. So again, it's only for local Iowa musicians and unsigned musicians, where they don't have other licensing deals in place. But it's kind of an interesting project to get local music into the hands of people who, will go to their shows. And really, I mean, when it comes to local musicians, I mean, that's where they make their money. I mean, they make their money in the live shows.
Absolutely.
And any merchandise. I mean, Christian, my friend Christian, when he would bring his CDs to a show, and he would go into it saying, "Oh, I'll buy some for like $5, whatever." And then most of the time, he would wind up giving them out, because it was just easier, and it's not like people were, breaking down, doors to get to, the CD store and buy a CD. I mean, it was just good to get his music out there. And there's some other Nashville Public Library is looking at what Iowa City is doing and trying to do something that makes it available to anybody online. So that's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But so yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a kind of interesting article, an NPR music article. So that.
Do you listen to the podcast for All Music Considered?
Every now and then, and I'll listen to like the XPN podcasts, like the World Cafe. I just have so much limited time to listen to podcasts. I try to, when I'm mowing the lawn or something, I'll try to catch up on some podcasts and try to find that's really the time crunch is is finding the podcasts that I'd be interested in. And there's so many. Like, I usually find them and I'll put them on my phone and then like I'll never get back around to them. And it's just a time crunch issue right now. But I really
All Songs Considered is such a fantastic podcast for music discovery.
Yeah. No, you're definitely correct there. I just haven't been able to listen to it all that often.
I was thrilled. I use a couple different podcatchers, all Android-based. The one that I use most frequently is called Pocket Casts. And I did a search on Technology in the Arts, and it popped right up because it uses iTunes for its library.
Excellent. I noticed you restructured the next part of our script for me.
I did. I'm glad that you noticed. I hope that shows up in the next copy of the show notes.
Well, it will, because yeah. I'm just gonna copy this over.
Good.
So let's see. We're going into like what, an hour and a half now. So
we really need to wrap this up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. It was like we took next week off.
I mean, because the government is already on its way to my door at this point.
Yeah, and it's like we took next week off, but now this webcast has gone into next week, so I don't know.
Yeah, you can split it up and make it into two episodes. Four episodes if you count the 6-second edition.
Yes. All right. So we're both getting loopy. Speaking of 6-second videos. Anything else you'd like to add at this point?
I don't think so. I think I've said enough.
I do too. I was gonna. I almost thought my co-host tonight was Malcolm Tucker.
Hey man, you know I feel strongly about things, and I think that we ought to begin to capitalize on that.
Did you catch that reference? Malcolm Tucker is the character that Peter Capaldi, the new Doctor in Doctor Who, played on The Thick of It and the movie In the Loop. And he's known for his...
Wait. He's Alan Thicke?
No, Malcolm Tucker.
Robin Thicke?
I didn't say anything about Robin or Alan Thicke.
Are you saying you want to do a version of Blurred Lines?
No, I did not.
Oh.
I do not. That's like the last thing I'd want to do.
Are you sure?
No. And you know what? We almost got through this webcast without acknowledging that disaster of a video music.
It was not a disaster. It was a genius move on her part.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't understand. I'm with Justin Timberlake there. I mean, I don't know why people were surprised. I mean, it's like that's what she does these days.
It is the entire business is that she did her job. I don't know why anybody is upset, honestly.
First of all, I don't know why anybody was. I mean, I watched it to see. Honestly, I watched it to see the Justin Timberlake thing because
a bunch of people watched it to see her twerk.
No, as much as I.
Yes.
I'm not a big Justin Timberlake fan. But
I'm a huge Justin Timberlake.
But that guy works his ass off.
Amazing comeback in the minds of most people with his strategy with SNL.
Yeah, I mean he works his ass off, and he's so good at that.
He's not nonsense. He actually sings. He actually produces.
Performs. Yeah, I mean
I don't have any complaints about Justin Timberlake.
No,
I'll probably listen to Justin Timberlake later tonight.
Yeah, I never was one to take him seriously. And then when he started doing the SNL stuff, and it was like, oh, he's pretty funny. And then when I realized like how talented he was, and
genius.
And the guy can make really a pop song.
Yeah.
The guy can make a pop song.
And that's all in the same way as Miley Cyrus, that is all anybody ever asked him to do.
Yep. Meanwhile,
they asked her to twerk, and they asked him to make a great pop song, and they do that.
And meanwhile, Lady Gaga continues to be a pretentious Kate Bush wannabe.
She's doing what she's supposed to do. Madonna is doing what she's supposed to do. Britney Spears is doing what she's supposed to do. There are slots to be filled, and they are all filling them. Mm-hmm. Miley Cyrus just switched her slot a bit.
I'm not even going to touch that.
Good. I'm really glad that you're not going to mention you know, my reference to slots, but I'm saying.
And filling them.
I'm saying TNA, we just lived up to our name.
Yep. For the first time.
For the first time ever. And we will have
you
the
have
greatest.
Received a text message from.
All right.
The following text.
All right.
That was the perfect ending.
I have to go.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that could. Hold on. We got to get through the ending first.
Okay.
Well, that concludes this episode of Technology and the Arts. Thank you for watching. And remember to visit us at technologyandthearts.com. Visit our Facebook page. Ask us to join your Google Plus circles, or we'll join your circle, Google Plus circles, whatever. Follow us on Twitter at tech_arts. Watch our YouTube channel at youtube.com/technologyandthearts. And look for us on your favorite podcatcher.
For Technology and the Arts, this is John Lemazney.
And this is Brian Kelly. Take care. Thoughts and views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of guests of the program. Conversely, the thoughts and views expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at technologyandthearts.com.